The 82-game preseason is finally in the books, and it's time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boost, and so much more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code POINT. Forward. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code POINT FORWARD. Only on DraftKings. Crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restriction terms and responsible gaming resources.
I think we can all agree the current political moment is fraught. But how does it compare to the other fraught political moments in history?
It felt for a time in part of that decade like everything was falling apart. Young people against old people, anti-war violence, peace movement.
I'm former U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara. And this week, presidential historian Doris Kearns Goodwin joins me on my podcast, Stay Tuned with Preet. We talk about difficult times in America's history and how its people overcame them. The episode is out now. Search and follow Stay Tuned with Preet wherever you get your podcasts.
What you guys are doing matters, all right? It matters to me. I get to know already your individual voices from knowing you guys, but collectively and culturally, we need that input. We need that participation. Y'all do me proud, man.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to yet another episode of your favorite podcast, Point Forward. I'm Andre Iguodala here with my main man, Evan Turner. We have a lot to talk about today. We also have Mike Wilbon on for an awesome conversation. Stay tuned for that. But before we start, please be sure to follow us on all of the platforms where you listen to your podcasts at Point Forward. The same goes for our social media handles as well. Point Forward is sponsored by DraftKings. Stay tuned because you'll hear more about DraftKings and all it has to offer throughout the show. DraftKings, the crown is yours.
Point Forward.
DT, the regular season has come to an end. Quite interesting. Good finish Sunday. Last Sunday we had everybody played. But as the regular season ends, having conversations around some of the top performers over the last 82 games or so. And then I did see Jason Kidd, I saw Kyrie Irving speaking to the spectacular year that Luka Doncic has had, and you've been talking about him for quite some time. But I didn't realize those numbers were those numbers.
Combined, like, second highest combined, like, stat total since Wilt Chamberlain.
Points, Wilt, rebounds, and assists.
Yeah, points, rebounds, and assists. And Wilt was averaging 30 and 23 this year. What's Luka averaging, bro?
He was at
Brian, basically.
Yeah, there.
So what, Luke? 28.7, 8.3 assists, 8.7 rebounds, all while having a 73-point game. And fifth in the West. The West is historically one of the toughest conferences.
Yeah. So in a while. Saying that a lot of the MVP conversations have been centered around two people. We even spoke about it, whether it's the Joker or it's, you like to call him Derek Luke.
Yeah, Derek
Luke. Shea Gilgeous Alexander.
Yeah.
Alexander. Yeah. Or Anthony Edwards, you know, 1-2-3, final tough finish in the West, and Ant doing that with, you know, an all-star going down late in the year.
And if you use Ant Edwards, you can also use Jalen Brunson, man.
Yes.
He solidified himself as the best player in New York, but big fella Julius Randle went out a couple months ago, G. You understand what I'm saying?
But I can't say what I want to say, but you can speak to, because you know how one guy goes down, and you don't want to, and then the flow feel like,
Yeah, you're right.
That conversation, you know, I'm not saying that's what it is, but folks say that.
I'm just saying on book, and I think one thing that occurs is easy for Julius Randle to get picked on. I think he always, you know, does the sense for how he plays. I think media also has those people that no matter what, they're going to throw shade at him. Because even before that, he was on a 2-month streak of just, he didn't make it to the All-Star game for no reason.
Right. I mean? He was
so
killing.
Yeah, when I'm sitting there, like, just that body, that confidence, but you know, say what you want about, like, Julius Randle in regards to, you know, his shot selection, but he's a competitor. And to have somebody like that out there, you definitely miss that tremendously. And they didn't miss a step. They made it to what? They finished second for the first time in forever. So I know Jokic is doing his thing, but there's been too many gigantic moments where you compare it to that of when they would take LeBron, when they want to give LeBron an MVP award. You understand what I'm saying? It's like SGA has the youngest team in the league.
In the league.
And he finished, what, first in the West. You know what I'm saying? Anthony Edwards lost Carl Anthony Towns. And what did he do? All he did was turn up some more, 27, 6, and 5. You know what we just said about Luka, bro? Luka been going dumb. Like, 70 points for, like, 1 year. A couple weeks ago, he had 32 and 20 minutes in, like, the first half. And then we forget, last but not least, our boy Jason Tatum. He makes it look so easy. We don't appreciate shit. Bro, they got 18 losses, dog, and they hadn't tried in the past 4 weeks.
And they kept having injuries every other week. Somebody was going down.
And that's what I'm saying. And Tatum's still averaging 27. Like, what do you want? Like, he just finished his work a month and a half ago, bro. That's my only thing where I'm asking. I'm looking like, bro, Boston is 63-18, and he got a
It didn't even feel like that.
Yeah, bro, it wasn't. And what made it so crazy wasn't like a celebration. They just went through a hoop, and I'm like, at one point, y'all only got 30. I'm looking, bro, I was with Tate. I'm like, bro, y'all only got 14 losses?
Yeah. 50 wins.
50 wins. Hey, bro, this is dumb. Like, what are we talking about now?
Yeah.
What do you think in regards to the MVP race and what goes into it? And, you know, do you throw it at Jokic or do you crown, you know, the new school? I think this is a big time to crown the new school.
Man, it's tough because you got to give Jokic his credit. But in terms of what Luka did this year, after all the criticism last year, you know, we saw him running stairs last summer. Everyone was talking about that. That was a moment.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of folks had some issues with what certain personalities said, like a Gilbert. But I think Gilbert's point was, you know, what criteria are we talking about? If you aren't first, you should have some astronomical numbers. Like, I'm hearing that. And I'm not agreeing with the statement that he's the worst MVP of all time. Like, we ain't not going there. But either it's, which is Shea, or astronomical numbers, Luka, or Jalen Brunson, what he did for New York.
I totally understand you. And if you like what Jokic did, then you got to throw Sabonis in the conversation. Like, and that's my only thing to really neutralize Jokic this year. Because I'm like, at one point, I'm like, they doing Sabonis so dirty. All he's doing is what y'all about.
And he can't even get an All-Star game.
And he can't even get an All-Star game. It's not even no recognition that he leading the league in triple-doubles as a 6'10 big man or whatever is going on. Like, he's also changing the way how the game is being played as well. So that's where I was like, if Sabonis ain't getting no love, shout out to Jokic, but he could lose this year if he didn't win a division. You say you don't care about the trophy, so give it to somebody that actually cares. Like, they need that bonus, dog.
Why are we overlooking Jason Tatum and the Celtics with the best record in the league?
I have no clue, bro. I think people with Tatum is kind of like the Steph Curry, LeBron thing. I think it's a respect factor where it's like, nah, you'll get the MVP. That's written. But like, what we want to see is where you're supposed to go.
So we got to see him win it first.
I just think that's what most people are expecting from him. It's on a bigger stature. Like, you sit here right now, there's conversations where people say if you do what he's supposed to do, you're going to end top 10. You feel me? Mm-hmm. And I feel like sometimes with certain people, and it's not bad because Tatum's still a dog. I just think like that platform and shout out to Steph Curry. It's like, now we've been waiting for 2 years for you to separate yourself more from these other little kids. Because when you do, SGA and Doncic are unbelievable. Like, you compare them to like what Tatum's done. He's done that for like 5 or 6 years now.
Yeah, but how we go a whole game without shooting a free throw? Now, that disturbed me on a whole nother level, ET.
And that's like when I be at the family cookouts and stuff, and they bring that up, I just swing with tears in my eyes because they you trunk. You know what I'm saying?
Fuck you, motherfucker!
He's unbelievable. What? Man, I'm looking like, fam, just get to the paint. That's it. One time.
I want to be like, bro, what's your dad be saying? Because Big Jay is a tough motherfucker. So I'd be like, bro, do your dad know you was out here not shooting free throws and all jumps?
Like, right.
Like, I couldn't even imagine going into a locker room with an old head. That's why you got to bring that to vets. Because when you sit there by a young fella, even Damian Wilkins is like, nah, it took you 17 shots to get 18 points and you went to the line twice. Like, what was you doing tonight, dog? Like, hey, nobody hit you. You touched the ball. That's crazy. You absolutely right, G. Shout out to Joe Mazzulla. I rock with everything Joe Mazzulla do, my nigga. And like Joe Mazzulla, for somebody that plays football when he hoops, I don't understand.
I thought you were going to say he played football in high school. I thought you were going to say he played football in high school. I didn't know you were going to say that.
Don't put his football when he hoops.
No,
like,
I seen it.
But at one point, like, bro, like, what are you trying to get? Like, Joe don't even shoot threes. So for his team to shoot all threes, she is crazy. Never mind. Shout out to Tatum. Shout out my man Tatum. You might have lost MVP off that. When J. Cole bowed out for the rap beat, bro, that's equivalent to not making free throws. And man. And this is one of my favorite dudes. You know I love this dude.
That's my little brother. Like, and so we can talk like that. Yes.
He spelled the name right. I would name my next son Jason. You know what I mean? Let me stop before he thinks I'm
No, here. You are dropping some gems.
Right now, we're talking about the MVP awards. What do you think about the Rookie of the Year awards? I feel like we talked about this before, but we got to go back to it. The Defensive Player of the Year awards, the Clutch Award, who after them, the Sixth Man of the Year award, the Most Improved Award. Like, you know off the top of your head who you would like to see finesse from there?
Wemby, Rookie of the Year, obviously. Chet played 82 games this year.
I'm not going to lie to you. Put respect on Chet's name. Chet is not Cole Rookie of the Year because Chet gonna be at Wemby neck for the rest of his career. It's all
I like it. Like, no, but Wemby at him, no. I like the energy.
No. They both gonna be at each other, but like to disrespect, it's like Chet, like, bro, I just came in and did 18-9 for y'all, like as a rookie and played all 82. Let's not do that now. And I'm gonna be playing till May at least.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, Chet could have not done that.
And we can talk about those matchups. I'm very interested. I'm very interested in the matchups. Sixth man of the year. Who just claimed it? Is Josh Hart start?
That's what I said. I thought it'd be like DiVincenzo sixth man of the year. Like, which one don't start? Which one start?
I mean, they had on him injuries, so it was. And, you know, DiVincenzo's like all time 3-pointers made in the season. Like, he went crazy, and for him to come on our show and lie to us, it was propaganda.
Or that he couldn't shoot.
I don't want to make it. I don't want to make it about a certain thing. But he supposedly wasn't a shooter. And now he's like 10th all-time threes made in the season. Something crazy like that.
When you come in a knife option, you get to shoot 10 threes a night. That's what I was like, bro. They starting to pass out these kids? Like, at one point, he started shooting threes like they was going out of style. I'm like, nigga, like, when did you start shooting like this? But shout out to DiVincenzo.
We had a great when I was in Miami, we had a great scheme for the Milwaukee Bucks when we beat them in the bubble. And it was for Jay Crowder. He had to shoot 10 threes. Spo told Jay, if you don't attempt 10 threes, you didn't do your job. I said, boy, this might be the best gig I ever seen.
Yeah,
you got to shoot 10 at a minimum.
Yeah, but I feel like that's a crazy gig. I think once it started hitting a certain point, they started killing my boy Jay because he's going 1-for-5 per half.
No, but that series he was making them. Like,
oh, no, I know. But like, you understand what I'm saying? You try to get somebody to rush, and eventually the dude that knew shooting 38%. Is now shooting on a scheme and being like, Skip, I just made 3 for you. Like, you know what I mean?
True.
Yeah, but he wanted to do numbers. Fuck it. He got him. That was 6 years ago. He's still in it.
Oh, have we ever had a rookie of the year get defensive player of the year?
I'm into that. If that's how to tell the story, I'm definitely into that. I will say this. Shout out to Rudy Gobert, but I'd much rather you take his award than take Chet's rookie of the year award.
You think Chet should be rookie of the year?
No. I'm saying co-rookie of the year. You're going to split something.
Okay.
But I'm just saying.
I'm with that.
I'm just saying in general, like, this whole conversation, we don't know we should give it to Rudy or big fella Wemby. I'm glad that Wemby exists so we can stop giving our defensive player of the year award to Rudy Gobert. That's not like that, but it's just like, nah, bro, every year you get defensive player of the year, and it's like, you know what I mean? Like, your defensive player of the year should be, like, scared. Niggas dead ass be docking on Rudy.
Go ahead. But my issue is, why has it gotten away from guards? Like, because that is a very, very difficult position. Probably the most difficult position to play. Like, you know what it's like guarding Steph and Kyrie?
No, and that's what, and when you talk about dudes that are two ways or whatever, it's like, nah, bro, like, who's doing this award because you're sitting down? It's like, no, bro, I just guarded 1-4. Literally every single time down the court. Like, legit. Like, Kyrie.
McDaniels? McDaniels?
When you break it down, like, it was like when somebody brags on, like, getting a lob call, or he's like, wait, the 7-footer docked it? So then you mean a 7-footer blocked the shot? Like, do you understand what I'm saying? Unless it's game-changing like Wemby.
I do think Gobert has the presence. Because I used to remember we wouldn't go in the paint messing with Dwight. And I do think you are reluctant to go to the paint on Rudy.
It's for real?
I'm saying he's going to get caught at a higher rate than Dwight would. But, you know, the man got a 9-foot wingspan.
Yeah.
You know, and so – I mean, you're going to get him on the perimeter, pick and roll, that's where you're going to beat him. No, I hear where you're coming from, because Terrence Mann, That's how we're going to beat you. And we execute. You know, I know how I go.
Yeah.
I won't be too critical of him. I don't know who's the sixth man of the year.
I'm trying to think who would fill in for that. There's a name falls on the tip of my tongue. Who is going crazy? Oh, Malik Monk, probably.
Oh, Malik Monk had a great year. And he got ended up getting hurt, and that's what's hurting. It's hurting Sacramento right now.
Yeah, but there's one more name, I think.
Nas Reed went crazy this
year. Yeah, I think Nas Reed went crazy. I think he's really talented. Man, to be honest with you, man, Peyton Pritchard. I know he ain't got the numbers, but
man, what Peyton Pritchard did the other night.
Bro, he do that every time. At one point, I want to call Brad and be like, you holding him back, bro. It's been too many games he comes in and just gets 30. Last year, he got a 30-point triple-double. Like, do you understand what I'm saying? Like, it's not normal to get 9 with your 38. You feel me?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a toss-up, but I'm not mad if it was like Nas Reed or one of those youngins.
Yeah, Nas Reed or Malik Monk for sure.
Point. Forward.
Hey there, it's Matt Norlander with the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast. And yes, we are in the thick of the college hoop season. Our pod runs at least 3 times a week and covers everything you need to know. From the power conference team to the mid-majors, the scoops, the stories, game predictions, previews, huge recaps, everything. We cover it all. To find us, search Eye on College Basketball podcast wherever you get your pods.
Point. Forward.
Oh, I got a doozy of a daisy for you. Coach of the year.
Man, give it to my man, too. Shit. No, give it to whoever's in OKC, G.
There you go.
Because, bro, to deal with a lot of young kids is crazy. Like, and then that coach got two of the rookies play all 82 games. The only two rookies in the league to play all 82 games was on OKC.
Another kid is Casey.
Yeah.
He can lock, and he's going to be future defensive player of the year if they start giving it to guards. I see him guard everybody.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think, like, to be able to do that, I think they said they're like 3 months on average older than UConn.
Dang.
And that's what I'm saying. Correct me if I'm wrong, we got to check that. But, like, what I'm saying in general is, like,
it sound right.
Yeah, we be forgetting, G, but, like, it's enough for us not to talk about Steph, Brown, Katie, and all that. Like, these little dudes that handling their business versus some scary bastards, bro. Do you know how good those dudes are, bro? Yeah. Like, are unstoppable. Like,
they playing with confidence, too, all of them.
Oh, my. Straight vibes.
Like, yeah, imagine growing up in that environment.
And that's what I'm saying. But, like, and that's what I'm thinking. Like, what's the next 10 years going to look like? And them dudes is calmly taking out the GOATs.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I ain't mad at that. I like that.
Clutch player of the year.
Who you got?
Shea.
Yeah, I give it to Shea.
Now, DeMar DeRozan, I show some love to him. He made some buckets.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I watched Dame this year like 4 or 5 times. Even though, you know, he had certain moments at himself, he did always hit him a big shot this year. So, if he ain't do nothing, when I literally was watching on TV, I'm like, one and another one.
But Shea was – you look, turn around the corner, and Shea was doing it like it was just –
yeah,
just a normal day at the office.
I would love to get that to Shea. I agree with that. Is that
a real award?
Clutch player of the year. Sometimes I forget about it, and then they give it to whoever.
Oh, most improved.
Could that be Nas Reed still?
I think Nas is a case of he's showing us who we thought he could be.
Yeah,
Nas can play some ball, but I'm cheating, and so I would have never thought of this name, but it's a really good name because he put on this year.
Boom.
In your hometown.
Chicago. Wasn't he crazy?
He was hooping, dog.
Yeah, on my youngin, Kobe White went crazy.
Yes.
He went absolutely crazy. Kobe White, he definitely is most improved. He went absolutely crazy. Yeah.
What he did to my guy, HB.
Yeah.
I was like, oh.
Yeah, he got hurt, but he went crazy. Yeah, like 39 or something. Shout out to MG. That's the only thing I don't like about the play-in game is, like, the Bulls – and Hawks ain't even trying to do that. Like, you know what I mean?
you might be right.
Signing the homies and bringing back old players for 10 days. And it's like, yo, not say like it's part of the game, but it's just like we can do without that bad TV. Like, the Hawks and the Bulls weren't even trying to win.
The play-in is for the West.
No, absolutely. I just want somebody to show up, and if the coaches are like, nah, we not fundamentally trying to quit. I want them to be like, we good. Y'all go about the like the NFL, when we sit there, it's like, bro, nobody watching that shit, bro. At one point, I said the Bulls. So even in your bad times, like, so what you have to do to make it to the play-in? Win 15 games?
Well, I mean, to be honest, when I saw the Hawks got in the play-in, I was like, wait, Were they trying to do that? Like, I honestly thought that.
And that's what I'm saying, bro. That's OD. But it's easy in a play-in when you got the Wizards and the fucking Pistons literally spelling backwards.
I got to look at these. Bro, I got to see the standings. Bro,
Wizards had 15 wins. The Pistons had.
I got to see the standings because.
Like, the Wizards and Pistons had to win 7 more games just to be considered bad.
Brooklyn was bad this year.
So this year, I compare. I always tell the story with, like, Kyrie before Brian got there. The East kind of looked like that, where, like, all you had to do was, like, place. It wasn't hard to place. I remember one year he had, like, him, Tristan, like, a decent team, Jared Jack. Like, you know, he needed 32 wins to make it to the playoffs. And that year he did not make it. I remember sitting back and being like, it's one thing if I didn't make it, but if you're supposed to be, like, a young GOAT, this is what you do, dog. Like, this was set up for you to make it. It's only, you could go, you could win 45% of your games. It's a terrible level to make it to the playoffs and advertise yourself. Like, that's what talent should be able to do if you're in the top percent.
If you're 10 games out of 8th, should you be allowed in the play-in?
No, bro. So y'all need to work on that, because that shit's full of shit, G.
I mean,
And then what make it bad is coaches be thinking they slick, and they'll try to throw that in their negotiation. Like, I made the play-in in 8 straight years. It's like, one year, nobody even wanted to do it.
A team made it to the finals from the play-in, though, last year.
Yeah, but that's the Heat, though, bro. That's different.
Oh, that was different.
No, it is. It's the Heat, G.
Like, I agree.
But, like, what do you think about the Sixers in that play-in?
I mean, I'm kind of along the same lines as you. Like, the East is set 1-8. Like, but we got to fill them TV slots. I mean, you might mess around and have an upset. No. Here's the conversation. Who wants to play the Nuggets?
That's crazy. Who's in that position now? It's
the Lakers play the Pelicans in the 7-8 game.
Oh.
The Warriors play the Kings in the 9-10 game. Whoever wins between the Lakers and the Pelicans play the Nuggets. So, do you position yourself to be the 8 seed?
To be honest with you, I would position myself to be the 8 seed. Because when you sit there, bro, you're going up against a bunch of kids. Like, that's your best bet. I just know that altitude alone, you don't want to go to Denver. While you play around or not, Minnesota's still somewhere you want to go. But I don't know. That little dude getting confident and crazier. So, like, it's starting to get dangerous out there, too.
Wait, Minnesota?
Yeah.
Oh, that's set. Minnesota, that's a great series. It's Phoenix versus Minnesota.
And the 2? I thought Minnesota was 2.
Minnesota got the 3.
Oh, I tweet. Oh, shit. Okay.
Denver is at the number 2. So, the winner between the Lakers and the Pelicans play the Nuggets. So, do you just... try to play. Do you lose the first game?
Yeah, I lose the first
game. Boy, you got to have some cojones
to lose the first
pull that game. One off. He had to have some cojones to pull this one off.
Bro, that's wild.
Dead giveaway.
Yeah, that's real, bro. That's real.
You know what I'm saying?
No, that's real. And lose that to go play. Man, that's real. Damn. My fault. I tweet. I really thought they finished third. Shit.
Mm-mm. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, we're going to see. I think you got to lose that, bro. You got to lose that.
But I don't know. Because it's like folks are saying, B.I. is back, though. B.I. is back. But we hear all the noise, you know, and it's definitely not true. But we hear all the noise about do we need LeBron and Steph to get into the playoffs?
Yeah.
But it can't happen. Both of them can't get unless LeBron goes against Denver.
Yeah, bro.
You know what I'm saying?
No, I hear you, G. I don't like nobody going against it. Bro, that's Jokic is a problem. Jamal's a problem. But that cheat code of that altitude, G, I just don't like seeing that with the first 2 games. It's not bad, but it'll always be like an asterisk, G, because when you play there, you know the difference.
They took some tough losses at the end of the year. And so I don't think their confidence is the same level as it was last year.
Yeah, true.
From what I've seen.
I can understand that. I mean.
And I'd rather catch them early than late.
That's real. That's
and
real.
You mess around, you get what you ask for. Mess around with them young boys in OKC because they ain't scared of nobody.
They ain't scared of nothing. I'm just saying, like, shoot, right? You just might have a better chance with the experience. Do you see Brian at any point being like, you know what? Let me just go for my legacy. If I ain't gonna win, let me just take out Steph again. Do you understand what I'm saying? And just being like, well, I knocked him out back to back, have my media team make that push and press effort. And I'll just continue to have a story of, like, trying to dismantle that dynasty that got me back.
Well, if I say that, I'm a hater, so.
Oh, no, but that...
I would neither confirm nor deny.
Weigh your pros and cons. And you ain't make no moves at really the trade deadline. I mean, Dinwiddie, he might help you with one game like Lonnie Walker, but when you sit in there...
You know how hard it is to play for the Lakers?
Yeah, I believe it.
That guy?
I can only imagine. I mean, shoot, I used to be friends with Darius Morris, and he struggled, and he was Darius Morris, like, playing for the Lakers. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they were on his ass type shit, you know?
Yep. Oh, that's a question I have for you. What teams do you see blowing it up? What playoff teams do you see blowing it up?
I think the Sixers. I think randomly, I heard somebody say this, and I don't think they will, but the fit of it, they really likes Milwaukee. If it really occurs, I think they have to double check and see how Dame and Greek Freak, you know, work out. You know, even with Greek Freak, we knock him a lot. At least I knock him a lot. He averaging 30, 12, and 6 from 60% shooting. We were sitting down trying to say that. I think that could possibly happen. That's the Golden State Warriors. I'm looking forward to them. I'm trying to mix some things up. And not so much contender, but I just think that type of group would really occur. So who do you think?
It's going to be interesting in a few squads. I think the Philly might have another year in them just because of the injury. It is, you know, injuries that save you some time. You know, just like coaches, certain things happen with coaches. Like, man, my best guy got hurt.
Yeah, but is it
from being fired? It's not going to happen to Nick Nurse, but
yeah, but it's an 8th straight year.
Yeah, but you know how Philly is. You just need an excuse.
Yeah,
just get you an excuse. And the Warriors, you know, that's going to be interesting depending on how far they go. That's going to be interesting to see what they do with that roster, the conversations that are coming from there. Miami is actually a place where I always keep a pulse on, you know, what's going on over there and reading a lot of articles. Ira Winderman, he does a really good job of, you know, trying to speak the truth and trying to be a real journalist. But he was speaking to, you know, the injuries with Tyler this year. Jimmy, you know, it's the playoffs now. Looking to see what type of year Jimmy has in the playoffs, I should say. Because I feel like it's been year on, year off, year on, year off. But they keep getting to the finals. And so, you know, if this is their off years, next year they back their own year. So that's going to be super interesting.
Do you make a real push for, like, an actual, like, real superstar?
Yeah, but they've been to the finals more than a lot of the superstars.
No, you're absolutely
right. They've been to the finals more than Giannis.
No, you're absolutely right. I'm just wondering, like, sometimes you use, like, a Dave and CJ or whatever. It's like, when have you seen enough of those two?
Yeah, if you go to the finals twice,
yeah, that's true.
It speaks volumes.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, man.
And they're technically still young. You know, Jimmy's 34, but Bam's young. Tyler's young. My young fella from Charlotte who's going, you know, you get him in the Miami Heat situation, nah, like, he's deadly, you know?
Yeah, I was just saying, like, do you want to have being, like, for sure a contender or overachiever? Like, do you understand what I'm saying? Like, the 2 years they made in the past few times, it was like, no, we love to have made this. You can see, like, where we were top 4 or 5, but it's like, all right, what years can you guarantee to rank? And that's hard to really do, like, because even when you get the Phoenix Suns before the season, they were ranked to really, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they got a chance to get there.
Who, the Suns?
Yeah.
I think absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you got them three coming into your place fully healthy and locked in. It's a tough mindset, you know? Brad Beal, your third best player, so.
They just blew out Minnesota the other night.
Yeah. Like
a real game.
True. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And sometimes, shoot, with Oprah's, man, it's all about when they hit their stride and feel good. It can be dangerous. You know?
As long as they dodge. I don't know. That third score for Phoenix is going to hit different when they're playing like the Clippers.
I think so.
You know what I mean? And kind of, you know, because Dallas, you know, Luka is a kryptonite for a few guys in the league. Won't say who. And then Kawhi is a kryptonite for a few guys in the league. But that third score is that Brad is a lot different. And I think he's finally hitting his stride if he can stay healthy throughout the course of the playoffs. How far has Brad been in the playoffs?
So when John Wall went down back in like 2015, Brad was 21 years old and he took them bad boys. I don't know if it's to the Eastern Conference Finals. He's averaging like 25, 7-7 as a 21-year-old. And that was when John Wall went down with a broken hand. So he had done some stuff on his own where you're like, damn, that was pretty impressive with the right type of team. So he's had some moments, even though it's been like, you know, almost a decade. He'll be ready to, you know, lock and load.
Point forward.
So this week, the DraftKings odds for the Western Conference winner. Nuggets actually are the favorite as the number 2 seed, plus 135. The Clippers are the second favorite as the 4 seed, They go up against the Dallas Mavericks at plus 600. OKC, number one seed at plus 700. Dallas Mavericks are actually have the fourth best odds at plus 750. Phoenix Suns are at plus 850. The Timberwolves are at a plus 1,000, which is very, very interesting. The Lakers at plus 1,400. Pelicans at plus 3,000. And so the Warriors are sitting in ninth at a plus 4,000. And Kings rounded out the 10th spot at a plus 12,000. Over on Eastern Conference, Boston Celtics, you know, one of those crazy odds at a minus 175. I'm starting to learn these odds things because the minus isn't good. It means you got to spend more money to make less money. The Milwaukee Bucks second at a plus 550. Then the Sixers at a plus 750. Then the Knicks, who are the number two seed but had the fourth best odds to win the Eastern Conference, at a plus 1,300. Then the Miami Heat. Then the Heat. At a plus 1,400, then Cleveland, followed by Indiana, Orlando Magic, Chicago Bulls, and then the Atlanta Hawks are at a plus 60,000, meaning they don't have a chance. And then that rolls into the championship odds by DraftKings. The Boston Celtics are the favorite. We were talking about that with JT. And they only have what? How many losses you say they had?
18
losses. Celtics at a plus 160, then the Denver Nuggets at a plus 280, followed by the Clippers at a plus 1200. We've been talking about the Clippers. The season ended a little bit up and down, but they had the third best odds. Then followed by Milwaukee, who's has an interesting second half of the season after firing their coach. They're at a plus 1400. OKC, number one in the West, is the fifth best odds at a plus 1600. Then the Dallas Mavericks. The Dallas Mavericks has some really good odds at a plus 1600. Then Phoenix, the plus 1,900. Then Philly. Philly has really good odds at a plus 1,900. Timberwolves plus 2,500. The Lakers at a plus 3,000. And it seems to be everyone else. And for the Knicks to be second in the East, they have the 11th best odds at plus 4,000. And then the Warriors, it looks like they're 16th best odds at a plus 8,000. So it's going to be interesting conversations after the season and what certain teams do.
Point. Forward.
The 82-game preseason is finally in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boost, and so much more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code POINTFORWARD. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code POINTFORWARD. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or West Virginia. Visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restriction terms and responsible gaming resources.
Let's go into this past weekend, bro. Did you watch your boys at the Masters?
I was heavily invested in the Masters. I felt like that's where my joy in life is at the moment. So I was locked into golf. I did pick Scottie Scheffler in my one and done league. We picked two people. So I picked Scottie and Brooks Koepka. I don't know where Brooks finished, but he made the cut. And then we paid a lot of attention to Tiger Woods. I paid a lot of attention to Tiger's new clothing line, Sunday Red. Sunday is two words. So he has some dope. He has some dope stuff on. Yeah, Sunday's two words.
Man, Tiger played his worst round of golf. That was the worst advertisement for.
But he made the cut.
No, that's true.
He broke the record. Broke the record for most consecutive cuts made.
Yeah.
Okay, this is a conversation about the Masters. All right. First and foremost, who is Scottie Scheffler? Scottie Scheffler is equivalent to Tim Duncan. He's just in his Tim Duncan mode right now. You know, not as marketable as people would like for him to be. And he just sticks straight to the fundamentals and he just going to win. You can't beat him. He's just in his bag right now. So, you know, he's just Tim Duncan. Do we want to see Tiger Woods go out like this? That's the question.
I mean, at this point, bro, he's just waiting to be illuminated. I feel like he's just showing up so y'all can see him.
Well, he do move the needle. Regardless of what the score is, they coming to watch him.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, when you're sitting down the other weekend, or even just with Masters, I was just looking at recaps. People are like, I mean, Masters is cool, but, like, we don't know who the top five is. So when you sit down, it's like, bro, even after a car crash, scandal, and everything else like that, it's like, dude, he's still moving a needle, and he shouldn't be walking. Like, you feel me?
He shouldn't be walking.
And sure like, you, like, you can sit here and be like, yo, Scottie Scheffler was the biggest winner this weekend. But then, like, the conversation goes that short because I'm sitting here like, man, we might as well talk UFC and just go on to Max, what Max Holloway did. You know what I'm saying? In regards to, like, the bigger. The
Max big, Holloway.
Did you see that?
No, what Perea did.
No, G did my man Bogus. That was crazy. Like, bro, I wonder what's inside them hands, Paul's. But, like, you know what I mean?
Bricks.
Like, no, because, bro, I know. We said that. Ooh. I know Paul could take a hit, G. I already.
Yeah, I know.
But, no, Perea ain't nothing. He said he's moving up to heavyweight now. Like, I might have to come out and fight this man. You know what I mean? Slow him down.
Yeah. But I'm going to be there watching.
Did you see what Max Holloway did to Justin Gaethje? Right there, G. Justin Gaethje, I was nervous for Max Holloway because Max Holloway is like a surfer skateboarder. Like, you know what I mean?
He's kind of, like, he got the slim, frail frame.
And Justin Gaethje is a real life dog. And how he beat Justin Gaethje down is absolutely crazy. But, like, I thought the biggest flex ever, he called him in middle ring after already beating his ass. Most people don't even give Justin Gaethje like 3 or 4 hits to like get on him.
Right.
Stuck out for the past 10 seconds. He dropped, buddy. Arguably the baddest man alive. Grabbed the belt and threw it to his girl. Do you feel
that? I didn't see that.
Bro, literally, bro. Drop that thing in fashion form, baddest motherfucker alive in front of his wife. And then drop the belt and like gave the belt to his own, like his own wife, Max Holloway.
Right. Yeah.
How wavy is that, G? You going home. I mean, you won MVP, so I can only imagine what Christina felt like. But imagine just thinking about it.
You're doing too good.
I'm just saying, Vegas, the baddest motherfucker alive, and you literally, like, bro, he beat the shit out of Justin Gaethje. Like, for the rest of life, I don't want to hear nothing else. Like, I just, like, my wife should bite my nigga inside, so you better quit playing. Like, that type shit.
Well, okay, I got a question. Did Jamal take that fight last minute?
He didn't take it last minute, but he took it, like, so he wouldn't lose his spot in line because he lost his belt because he tore his Achilles. So when he came back, he's like, bro, I'm 35 and I still just want to get my spot in line, try to get my belt, but also get these last few years in. So he was trying to go back. And also, too, it's the best, not the best fight for him to come back because, you know, Perea is a dog, but I mean, it's a stand-up fight. You understand what I'm saying? Like, that's what would feel, you know what I mean? That's what would have been best for him regardless. He just.
Did he get any hits in?
I mean, you got that kick in. No, you get no fucking hits in. A fight only lasts 48 seconds.
I thought it said 3 minutes and 48 seconds.
I mean, no, it was 3 minutes and 48 seconds, but he weren't on shit. It was the first round. You know what I mean? Like, so you know how it goes. Like, they probably exchanged like a few times, and then by the time he kicked Buddy, like, illegal kick, he was like, no.
To the ref, he said, no, he didn't lose eye contact. He said, move to the ref, move.
And that's where I think that's where I be wondering fighters. He's like, oh no, he just tried to cheat shot me. This nigga scared. Like, you know what I mean? That's where I wonder if he's like, I'm gonna drop his ass right now. I know you felt the master sheet, but I was on the couch from 5 p.m. to 1 a.m. like a little kid watching UFC. I stayed inside, and literally, when I see Dana White, I would like to thank him, G. Unbelievable, fam. Unbelievable. No comment. Unbelievable. I feel you, Joe. Dana White was on his Donald Trump, but he's throwing out $300,000 for bonus performances, G.
Yeah, I heard about that.
They call him $600,000, G. He did his thing this week. Buddy did his thing this week.
WWE had their best performance the week before at WrestleMania, and so it's all under the same umbrella. Endeavor, who just took private again. That was some of the best payout packages I've ever seen. Oh, my God.
But this is what's so dope, too, now, bro. Good for the fighters. You understand?
Yeah.
When you're showing up or whatever, it's like, nah, bro, we can have a convo and be like, if it's a big event or this and a third, like, we should be able to make big numbers off big-ass events when we're breaking up, you know? I think that should be the norm. I think somebody said the other day we should make it impossible for athletes to go broke. Not in a weird sense, but the opportunity to open up very different like lanes in order to get their piece of the pie.
That's a topic for another day. I got so much to say on that.
I mean, shit, tell me.
Nah, I just feel like what percentage of your value do you extract given how much you get? So if you get paid a certain amount, how much is that really worth? You know, we've been hearing this for quite some time. We don't know how valuable we are. And so, you know, they make the market for us. And so you're saying like Moses Malone, he gave a great speech pregame. It was one of the last games in the Spectrum. And, you know, he didn't get no pregame speeches. The assistant coach always bringing good vibes. Good dude. And I would love for Lou Williams to tell the story, but because Luke sounds just like him. But he's saying, like, you know, I averaged 32, 15, and 8 and this man will give me $1 million. He was the first $1 million player in the NBA. He was like, I'm going to get $1 million a year. He was like, man, I was scared. I was scared of shit. He was like, I can't do no better than 32-16.
Yeah.
What you want me to do? Yeah, he was giving me $200,000 to get that. Like, you want me to 5X what I'm doing? Because that's what you're paying me, 5X. And he was just like, but then at the same time, it's like, if you could pay me $1 million, how much you really making off me? So how much am I really worth? I used to always think about it like that.
Oh, no. I'm just saying, like, people are getting to enough to be like, all right, I'm done asking them questions. Like, you understand what I'm saying? Like, back in the day, you're like, man, this ain't enough. Now it's like, all right, you got 8 more years to distract me before I start asking, what?
especially in that field.
No, in that field, for real, when you're sitting there, you're like, bro, the rookies is coming in making $15 million. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's just too much money. When you're sitting around and you're like, nah, like, what's going to pause, explode in this market of life is going to be crazy.
Yeah, it's true.
Point forward.
This week on The Pitch, AI versus models.
My co-founder and I have never been represented when shopping online. This lack of representation in e-commerce drives down conversion rate, leads to a high return rate, and is a problem for both consumers and brands. This is where Flock comes in.
I'm looking at a lip product here.
Yep.
So it's got some up-close pictures of lips in lipstick with different skin tones, different nose shapes.
Is that AI generated?
It's fully AI generated.
Got it. Mm. It's an existential question for modeling agencies. Because besides walking down a runway, what are you doing?
Modeling might go away.
There's just no other way to be able to do it in a scalable solution without using AI.
Things get existential on The Pitch. Go right now and subscribe to The Pitch wherever you listen to podcasts.
Point forward.
I was walking down Michigan Ave one day, and I was walking past Neiman's, and I walked into this fella, and we go inside, and he's picking out like some button-up shirts. I'm too young to really be into suits, but I'm trying to learn my way around. And he tells me about this brand called Keaton, and he said Keaton has the greatest shirts of all time. And I've never, ever forgot that. And recently, I did just pick up about 4 Keaton button-ups, and my pockets felt it. But
yeah, I put my car back once I tried to get my 4. I was like, oh, damn.
So in saying that, I want to welcome the co-host of Pardon Interruption and NBA Countdown. He has been in our living rooms for the past few decades, and he has all taught us, you know, how to properly voice ourselves, how to present ourselves, and just what he's done for the sports and real journalism. And Evan Turner's got a great story on
what we compare journalism to.
But welcome, Michael Wilbon, to the show. Thank you for showing up. Appreciate you.
No, man, I appreciate y'all. Come on, I get to be on with you guys. Come on, this is great now. I mean, this is two guys who, you know, you don't necessarily say this often enough, but you should. Like, people ask me all the time, so who's your favorite this, who's your favorite that? And I do say to them, I say this to students too. I'm like, y'all ain't going to understand why my favorites are my favorites. Because if my favorites are people that I get to talk to in a locker room or at shoot around in the morning or after a game when they don't feel like talking to nobody and they give you a few minutes to talk about something. Or on the off day, if I'm walking down Michigan Avenue or if I run in to Evan, I don't know, where did we run into each other? Maybe it was a game.
We were at the Chicago Sky game.
At the Sky game, of course.
At the Chicago Sky finals.
Those encounters and those chats mean so much to me. And so people don't understand that when they ask me, who's your favorite? And maybe they're looking at you like, what? But those are my favorite things, because that's when you really get to know people and build some trust in communicating, which I'm so proud of you guys for doing this, because you guys are always two of the all-time communicators when it came to just expressing yourselves and owning those feelings. And so I'm honored.
I know. We appreciate that. Thank you for those words. I think one thing that occurs is, you know, people like yourself that really get out in the forefront and really set the tone. We had a conversation with the Honorable Isaiah Thomas with one of our first pods. And one thing he talked about was, having people in our spectrum, and, you know, the game really started changing when people of our culture really broke in and started taking it more so from on court to, you know, the whole thing of culture. And I think that's one thing that you really were able to shift the narrative about in regards to making us be seen, but being able to spread the appeal of the Black athlete. And I want to know where that came from and how you're able to really, you know, get that going, because you started the Washington Post back in the 90s.
80s. And then,
you know, in the 80s. When you interned in the 90s, obviously you went on as a full-time columnist, and from there your star grew. So can you take us back to the beginning of it all, and you know where it was that you found and voiced your opinion, and you know really shift the culture, because what you were doing could get you fired, you know?
Evan, I that means a lot to me to hear you say that, man. It's funny you mentioned Isaiah too, because we go back. I was probably on the same playground with Doc and Isaiah when I was 15, they were 13, but there wasn't no reason for them to know me because I wasn't good enough. Yeah. For them to remember me on the playground. But the expression part, I think, first of all, I didn't know that I was doing that. And I think anytime you start to really, I'm not that self-examining, but I knew that words and language were important, really important. Like I learned that very early on. I was just lucky. That's my thing. If I have a gift, it is understanding the language is important. Expression is important. And we didn't own much of it. Right. It was always somebody else expressing our stories. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up with another Chicagoan, Southside, of my first cousin, Carol Simpson, when she was the first Black female correspondent on television in the 70s. And having that kind of person at Thanksgiving dinner at your house on Sunday, I could ask anything. I could see her. I could be proud of her. And then I was lucky. Chicago is critical to this because Wendell Phillips was on Channel 9. So people will say to me, well, you were a pioneer. I'm like, no. Wendell Phillips was a pioneer because when I grew up, when I was 10 and 12 years old, I had this guy. I could read his column in The Defender or in the Sun Times and then see him on Channel 9. Yeah. Then no one had to. Like, I found out recently that his widow just died, like, during the pandemic.
Oh, wow.
She lived till she was like in her late 90s. And I wish I had met her just to say thank you, because that was a gift he gave me. I never met him that I know of. But then there were people like Lacey Banks in Chicago. Chicago always had people speaking their minds.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
When I was 10 years old, I walked into my kitchen one morning. My father had just got fired, laid off from his job at Dean Foods in Chicago. Fired. He was the number one sales guy in Dean's Foods, and he got laid off. I walk in my kitchen on a Wednesday morning. I'll never forget. I was 10 years old. And there's this dude sitting there with a perfectly shaped fro and long sideburns in a dashiki at my table. And this Reverend Jesse Jackson.
Oh, wow.
27-year-old Reverend Jesse Jackson. I was 10. And we've talked about it, you know, as I got older and I got to meet Reverend Jackson as an adult. And we talked about it. And he remembered. He said to me the first time, he said, your father, Ray. And he said, you know, we couldn't let your father get laid off like that. He was the only Black salesman at the company. Mm. And again, expression. It was the expression that was I'm not going to say it was as important as the deed, because the deed saved my father's gig and let him put us through school. But it was the expression. Reverend Jackson could do that, like, as y'all know, like nobody. And it was through the expression, and it's very different ways that people express themselves. But that's where I got it from. And I married the two things, to answer your question, Evan, directly. I married my two interests. My interests were sports and journalism. And because God knows it couldn't have been nothing with no math and science in it, because I couldn't be sure. But I wanted to stay close. I realized when I was 15 and this kind of fat kid hit like a home run off me to still going in Foster Park, Kirby Puckett ended my baseball career.
Damn, really?
Yeah, he ended Doc Rivers' baseball career, too. That's something Doc and I have in common. Kirby Puckett hit home runs off both of us, and it was like, okay, that's over. We ain't that good at that. And so I knew I wanted to stay close to sports, but storytelling was going to be my way in.
From there, from the South Side of Chicago, you went to St. Ignatius Prep. I'm sure you saw a lot of cool stuff there. And then you were able to jump off and go to the Ivy in the Big Ten, Northwestern. Right there, you were able to, obviously get your degree in journalism. What was that about growing up during that time? What was, the vibes like in, sports journalism before you were able to take off into Washington and do your internship?
Well, you know, because of Wendell Smith, who I mentioned, I never thought, like, Like, I didn't have that feeling of, I don't see anybody who looks like me, which most of us have, right? I mean, most kids in most professions have that.
Yeah.
But I didn't, because I saw somebody who looked like me. I didn't think it was impossible. But, you know, going to Ignatius, and Isaiah and I talk about this, going to
the school we went to. Yeah, we went to the same high school, me and Isaiah.
You guys did? Okay. Okay. I definitely didn't know that.
Yeah. So you comprehend when I'm talking to you, you say South Side, but I'm worried about the South Side Irish. So I'm asking, like, when you went over there, I'm like, all right, now you saying that, but you ain't go to Marist. Like,
I know. Listen, I felt that way when I was coming to the West Side. I was like, hold up now. But when I was going to K-Town to see some girl when I was 15, I shouldn't have been over there.
But yeah, you're wrestling for life.
But Evan, you know those things that we now share and laugh about and feel very good about our lives.
Yeah.
Like they started those roots go back to that and those schools, right? And I was very lucky. My mother taught school for 35 years, Burnside Elementary School on the South Side. And she taught school. But I went to a tough, strict St. Ignatius, prepared me for going to Northwestern. I never thought about leaving because the number one journalism school in the world was right there, even though it's 30 miles. But you know, y'all know how this is. Evanston was like 1,000 miles from the South Side, right?
You know,
it ain't had nothing to do with where we grew up or the culture we grew up in. But I felt comfortable. There were enough kids that I felt comfortable there. And the state of journalism is so important. Like, I had encouragement. I had encouragement from important people. I never felt I was on an island. Now, the room wasn't populated with us now. Don't let me leave that impression. But I think there were people that I could look to. Like when I was first getting out of school, Ralph Wiley, the great Ralph Wiley was there. David Dupree, I mean, who covered the NBA. And they introduced me and I would get to meet Elgin Baylor and Mr. Russell. And I would meet, you know, Bob Lanier became somebody that was, you know, very important to me. When I was the only one in the room, like those guys, Julius Erving could pull me aside and say, come here. You need to know this. You need to know that. You need to know me. And those guys, man, like that's why I'm so big on the history of the sport. I don't ever want anybody to forget them dudes.
Yeah.
You know, Wayne Embry. I mean, I could go on and on. Wes Unseld, my God. Big John Thompson. Those guys, they never call you till 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning either. And they call you, and I'm a late night animal, so they call you, and you don't get an earful. John Chaney. So it was both college and pro for me, and we could sit and have conversations. I could have a conversation with Doc, I could have a conversation with Zeke, and those things were very important. So that by the time I was, you know, an older guy, and I could see you guys, I felt comfortable having the conversations that I thought we should have, and I always wanted people to trust that I was going to do right by their story. That was important.
I think one thing that occurs, you say you never want people to forget those names. And we're coming up on, you know, that new NBA, the new regime and how everything's going right now. You see certain people saying, you know, the game is going European. How much that has looked different. And some of our top players and MVPs are Euros as well. Talk about, you know, not wanting those guys to be forgotten. But how do you feel about the narrative of, you know, the NBA kind of losing the American player or the narrative that keeps getting driven? And, you know, what can you say that's true or false about it? And what can, you know, we do as Americans to really, you know, solidify, you know, going against that narrative as opposed to having to wait till the Olympics so we kick the shit out of everybody?
Well, I'm going to tell you, I mean, I covered the Dream Team. I mean, I was there with them from camp in San Diego to Monte Carlo to Barcelona. I was with those guys. I knew them all. I never got to know like four guys out of the 12 well.
Christian Leitner?
I never got to know Stockton well, but nobody ever got to know him.
Okay.
I didn't know Larry that well. That was just maybe me. I didn't know Larry that well. But, you know, Magic and Michael and Charles and Chris Mullin and David Robinson. I saw David Robinson play in high school.
Oh, wow.
I've known David since he was, you know.
When he was 6'6".
Yeah, when he was 6'6". And Dre could walk down the basketball floor on his hands. The whole length of the court. Yep.
He was always a specimen like that?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, 6'6". He was unbelievable.
He was 6'6". He grew like 5 inches
in
the Army.
One summer.
Or Navy. In the Navy.
In one summer.
Navy.
And he's lucky. Because if he had grown the earlier summer, he wouldn't have been in. They couldn't have accepted him. but he grew and they let him in. And so I would go see. They said, hey, you got to come see this guy, David Robinson. I said, I just came and saw him last year, the 6'6 kid. They're like, yeah, well, he's the 7'1 kid. I'm like, oh, my God, I'll be right there. So I saw David the whole – but so, most of those guys on the Dream Team, Patrick, I covered – I covered Georgetown basketball. So,
yeah.
So not 8 of the 12 guys or 9 of the 12 guys I knew really well. But let me tell you, man, the narrative is only going to change if we become less arrogant about it.
I know.
I mean, we, America as a culture, not just, my kid is, I got a 16-year-old playing, and he plays for one of the coaches who's one of the 18 under coaches of USA basketball. So I'm very aware of it. The last 5 MVPs, foreign born, and it won't just be Europe. So I was with Masai Ujiri a couple weeks ago. We had breakfast in LA. I'm going to tell you, man.
That ABL. Yeah.
Yes. So the ABL and just African basketball in general. European basketball, because they idolize, their idols were those players in 92 and then subsequent to that. I mean, I know Tony Kukoc, one of the reasons why they killed him in the Olympics, he was scared. He idolized them. And I got to know Tony and play golf with him and talk about how he felt about Scottie and Michael, even when he had to go against them. He was terrified because he idolized them. So now you got all these generations coming up and they're emulating our players. Our culture, they're not scared of it. They're not intimidated by it. It's what they do. I went to China just before the pandemic, and I saw the fanaticism over world basketball in China.
Yeah,
they waking up to watch games, NBA games at 8 a.m. You guys know this because you've visited more countries and planet than I have. Evan, I don't know that narrative is going to change. So I was just doing a little recon work on the draft coming up. The draft might be 2 French kids at the top again.
Yeah.
ET, what they say about the draft this year?
They said it was arguably one of the worst drafts in the history of the draft. So the one of the French kids is, Jeremy Rocher, what's his name?
Yeah, you're pronouncing it better than I would, but we're talking about the same kid.
Yeah, we're talking about the same kid.
But if it ain't those kids and the star kid, if it's not those kids at the top, they're saying this would be, so you, of course, we're hearing the same things because we're talking to probably a lot of the same people, but the world, I just think that it's going to be good to be world inclusive because what our kids are going to see, because I tell my kid this all the time. We went to see a soccer game last week and I said, you accept all these foreign-born soccer players, don't you? We were in London. We went for his 16th birthday. So I think our kids need to see that global sport. And it became global because of that 92 team and the 88 team that lost, by the way. I covered John Thompson's team. That team lost. David Robinson was on that team. Hersey Hawkins.
Oh, Hersey. Chicago.
Team,
okay.
Thinking the Chicago guys.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking about him first. But, that team lost.
Was Mully on that team?
Huh?
Was Mully on that team? Chris Mullins?
No, Mully wasn't on that team. Dan Marley was on that team.
Dan Marley was on that team.
So I just think, okay, this is an important, we could just do a whole thing on this topic. Obviously, you guys know that because you're in it. But I've been talking to some people. I've been talking to our people in USA basketball. They worry.
Are they?
Yeah. Dre think I'm playing. Dre.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie.
They worry. You know why? Because, and Dre, you're the perfect example of this.
You're talking to media people. You weren't talking to USA.
Oh, no. I'm talking I ain't talking to no media people. I'm talking to basketball people. Okay,
I know why they're worried, though.
Well, here's why. Main reason. You know this better than anybody will ever know. You know what it's like to be part of a unit that stayed together and trusted each other and lived together and played together. Like slapping them teams together overnight.
Yeah.
Teams in France and Germany and Spain, they too good to just slap teams together, had that all-star format. Yeah. So I'm like, I can't mention who I asked, but I asked one of our USA basketball people, I said, hey, is this going to be that hard? And he was like, hard. Like, come on now, don't be like young players. You travel the world, you see this. And then I start hearing about, hey man, it's going to be one Olympics too early for the African teams. But yeah. In 2028 and 2032, it's going to be another whole movement. It's going to look like Europe in 92, 96 when they beat it. I was there in 04. I watched us get our ass kicked.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, but I believe in that too. Because I'm like, you pump the same stuff into the Africa basketball leagues you pumped into China.
Yeah.
Or you pump in even to like Europe. I mean, and I'm not, we always say, I joke with Dre. I'm like, bro, I don't know what was made in that soil, but y'all are superhumans. you add that in right. with discipline. You add that in with resources and funds.
Coaching and
a natural ability of what we already have. I mean, you look at Embiid. He started playing basketball like 7 years ago, and he's the greatest, you know what I mean, the best big of all time.
Yeah.
Look at the Sarge or some of the French people. Some of the French players that were produced, you know, from an African descent. I understand where you're coming from.
We lost a little bit of our humility, and I think it goes to what Mike's talking about with, you know, we got a little arrogant, we got a little cocky. We lost our humility in our game in the way we approach it. Like, everything's expected to just be half for us. Like, it's like the portal. You don't have to go through adversity.
Let me go find a quick fix. Yes.
Yeah, and it's like everybody's going to the league before they put the work in to get to the league. It's like, nah, like you gotta, like you should, it should be a privilege to get there. And now it's the more like, it's what I'm supposed to have.
Y'all are perfect examples of what the opposite thing is. Look what you guys did. You worked your butts off, didn't presume anything, kept working all the way into the league and being in it. And the way you guys went about your craft and your livelihood, like that quick fix stuff, I worry about it. But it's going to be fascinating, though. It is. This summer will be a fascinating tell on world basketball and like the state of it, the state of our basketball and our program. We talk about Grant and Steve. Man, these guys are guys Grant's another one. I saw Grant Hill play in high school. Grant's, you know, in the DMV. I saw Grant play as a sophomore in high school with his dad. I went with dad. Because his dad was just retiring from the Redskins as an NFL player. And I knew Calvin. I'm right in between their ages. I'm 15 years younger than Calvin and 15 older than Grant. And I would see Grant play in high school. So, you root for the people that you know. I do. People ask who I root for. I root for my friends, damn it. I root for the people I know and like and love. And I root for Steve. But I'm curious. I know how hard they're working to bring that humility back, Dre. Like into camp, into meetings. Like, don't look at this dude and think he can't play because you don't know his rating, right?
Right. Yeah.
So that's a big thing.
I think with Bron and Steph and KD, they understand like what's at stake.
They know.
Yeah. They know we can't lose.
Dre.
I got my trust in them.
Dre, because as you know, Bron been he was at that. He was on that squad. By the way, do you think all those guys are going to be? I just hope they're physically able to play. Because the playoffs take such a toll, which y'all know much better than I'll ever know.
I mean, whoever the 7 seed could – we were just talking about that, E.T. and I.
Yeah.
Whoever decided to be 7, your summer going to be cut short. Yeah. And you're going to have plenty of time to
play Denver. You got to play Denver right away. Yeah, I know we all talking about that. Perk and I were texting each other a little while ago.
Yeah, so, I mean, and that goes into, like, one of the things E.T. and I have been talking about based on what you've spoken about the game with analytics and how you've been – speaking up about how it's kind of thrown us off because E.T. will always say this early on. It's just a way for a certain group, and I'm not talking about a certain color, whoever's close to who's buying a team to give them input and a say-so of decision-making, right? Charles has been talking about this. It's the guys who can't play. It gives them the arena to speak at a whatever. They decide to call it a higher level because they can call out a bunch of numbers. And it's taking away what? The mid-range. We're so upset at our younger brother, JT, for not shooting a free throw for the entire game. What are we doing? We don't get one free throw, you know, trying to tell folks when you get late in the game, in the finals, it don't matter what type of shot you get. You want the best available shot. And most of the time it's the elbow pull up. And that's why MJ was so deadly. Like he just had it. So things like that,
Dre,
back to the basket.
You voicing something that is like lost. Like, look. You first of all, I agree with y'all on this. Beyond agree, it makes me mad. So it was about 5 years ago when analytics first started. Really, they came in baseball much earlier. Then they start coming to every sport, but basketball, it would make me angry because I'm like, okay, when do we ever, no matter how serious, people could be having serious basketball conversations, we don't ever start a conversation with numbers. We start with impressions. We start with, can you believe this dude can do this and have this impact on this game? So I have a vote. You know, I've worked out what I'm going to do with my vote. And I've been on people all year about why they don't recognize Anthony Edwards for the impact he has on the game. E.T., I go nuts, bruh, because they giving me number. I say, stop. You think that that block shot was just worth 2 points? You think that dunk was only worth two? You think the emotion he brought to his team, which is not quantifiable, y'all can't measure that. So therefore, what, it didn't happen? So I go crazy over this.
We always say quick. You can't quantify quick twitch. And they trying to bottle it up.
And some of the dramatic things that happen in a game. So the other day, I was at the championship game here in Arizona. And I was watching with Kenny and Charles and Avery Johnson and Jay Wright. And it was great. I'm honored to watch with them. They could have thrown me out the room. I don't even belong in there with them. But one of the things we were talking about was when a play is working, and you guys played long enough ago to remember to know what I'm talking about, you're going to go to that play until they either get that dude off you or you go cold, one or the other. You're going to run that play. Now you see something successful twice, and they go to something else in a playbook, or, well, this player, you know, he needs, or like in baseball, he can't get through the rotation three times. What? Bob Gibson couldn't get through the rotation three times. Ferguson Jenkins couldn't get through the rotation. What are you saying to me? But, and with basketball, it's the same thing. And there's no common sense. There's no sense of competition. Like on the playground, you learn that. We're going to wear this dude's ass out until they either get him out the game, or we're going to win the game. We go into this play. There's no more like the elbow jumper. So, Dre, that must make you crazy.
Oh, well, I mean, we talk about it all the time. All the time. And we're crazy because that's how we feel about it.
Yeah. And then
I feel justified since y'all feel this way, because, you know, you hear me. I'm screaming and hollering on TV everywhere. I'm shaking my head. I'm probably rolling my eyes. And as I know there's a place for it. But you know what I do? So I will go to coaches that I really, really respect, really, who are great talking to me and exchange information. And I'll say, Coach, tell me which numbers matter to you for real. Mm-hmm. Which trends, which patterns, what matters to you? Like I had somebody tell me about plus minus one day. It might have been Doc. Doc said, don't take plus minus in individual situations as well as you take it in a group. How can you take plus minus individually when you've got a group of five and all those guys are dependent on each other in whatever time they're on the floor? And that made so much sense to me. And I never get carried away with plus minus without context. And E.T., this goes back to your earlier question, bro. I want those stories to reflect context. Yes. Everything has context. And so I want to bring opinions. I want to bring, because people like will ask me how I do stuff. Dre got tired of me. I know during the championship years, because I'd be in the locker room and I want to go to heads that know. I want to go to people with intellect. I want to go to people with savvy and experience and can go back and forth the conversation. That's the only way, to me, we can accurately portray what is happening in a game, in a season, in a locker room, in a career. Any of that, all that stuff, you got to have people give you input that have an understanding of that, to me. Mm-hmm.
Now, I wanted to go back, I guess, like, when you look at the landscape now where you're discussing, you know, overall, like, the basketball, the season coming in, or the playoffs coming up, and you're seeing, like, the whole field be, you know, crazy unique in the sense of how, you know, low the Western Conference is, and we're talking to MVPs and everything like that. Where do you see this whole thing shaping out realistically? And do you see any shockers? Are there any sleepers that might really, really get to that point? You like Anthony Edwards, and you think he has enough to be able to get over and shock the world like he's been doing all year? Because we talked about him playing an MVP caliber as well. That's and nobody talks about that as well.
That you know, that kind of consumes me this week, obviously, starting yesterday. Like, I think there's so many people who can play. There's so many good teams. Like when we started the season, I said on my show, I said on Countdown, I've never seen this many teams have a chance to win. Like, usually, what is it, two or three for real?
Yep.
Then, you know, this year, I'm like, okay, I still favor Denver. I do. But do I think that Minnesota can't beat Denver? No, I'm not going to say that. Do I think Phoenix can't beat Denver? It's unlikely, but I don't want to say that. Do I think that Boston, tell you what, if Julius Randle wasn't hurt, I like the Knicks to push Boston. I'm not saying necessarily to beat them, but I did. Great. You and Evan both had the eyes. I'm going to tell you why. So in December, we were who could challenge Boston? And everybody's talking about Milwaukee. And, you know, obviously, I'm even though I'm a Chicago boy, I'm rooting for Doc. I'm rooting for – but I didn't like what Milwaukee did. I didn't like losing Drew Holiday because he and Dame do such different things. I respect – I love Dame. Yeah. But they do different shit. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm cursing. I can't curse.
We blurted it out. Don't worry.
All right, good. So I'm looking at Milwaukee going, eh. And then Philly, I like Philly because I'm a Maxi guy. And so I like what – like I at the beginning of the season, I said Maxi might make third team. I'm going to vote him third team. I don't know if he's going to make it. But I thought the Knicks, because one, Jalen Brunson. Look, Dallas has done a great job recovering. Dallas did a good job getting my man from the Wizards, who was on the Bulls, big man.
Gaffer.
Gaffer, yeah. They did a good job getting Gaffer. They did a good job with Lively.
Lively.
All this helps Timmy Hardaway. You know, all this helps. And Luka's playing offensively out of his mind. But they let Jalen Brunson go. They could have had him for $1.50. And yeah, they let him go. Right? And I've always been a Brunson guy. I'm like, yo, man, this dude is made. Speaking of Chicago guys. Just makes himself. He created a player. And so I thought the Knicks, until Randle got hurt. But now I don't think anybody can really challenge Boston. I can Miami do it? I don't know. I worry that Jimmy has had so much wear and tear from the playoffs that he might not be the playoff Jimmy that I have enjoyed covering over these years. But the West is so crazy. Denver worries me. I don't like Denver's lack of depth. I think that losing the dudes they lost at the end of the season off that championship team. I mean, I know people going to say Jeff is old. Okay, fine. Jeff knew what to do on a specific night if Michael Malone called on him.
Yeah, Bruce Bowen was getting in his bag last year.
Bruce Brown
was in his bag, but there was one stat that when he scored nine. Here I go with analytics. When he scored 9 points or more, they were 12-0. In the come on, this dude, you totally right. So anyway, I think going back to Ant-Man, can he shock the world if Cat can come back to play like he was playing in January, in February. Maybe, because then that takes some pressure off Ant. Maybe Minnesota's got the personnel with Rudy and Kat and Ant. They got the personnel. Now,
they got the toughest matchup for them, though,
in the
first round.
No question. Oh, my God. Toughest matchup for them with that, having to play that offensive juggernaut. So, man, can Ant shock the world? It might be too early, Evan, but – like, I'm one of those people that, like, I spent some time with him recently just because I wanted to see what he was like, right? I love his personality. Like, remember when he crashes to the ground, when he blocks the shot, he crashes on his wrist?
Yeah, yeah.
So the next game is in L.A., and I was in L.A. in the studio. So I went across the street to Staples. I still call it Staples. I went across the street. And I said, yo, man, like, I know they must have tried to get you not to play. He's like, yeah. They all didn't want him to play the next night on the back-to-back. And I'm like, why are you playing? He's like, come on, man, I'm young. I'm playing. Right. I bounced up. Did you see me bounce up? I'm like, yes, I saw you bounce up. Yeah. And his attitude was like invincible. It was just something I like about him.
Yeah. And I feel that. And I think like you mix in what he's able to do, mix in with Jason Tatum, we take it back to the conversation of like our young great players and how much they're not even in a conversation in the top three. Tatum right now for the past month has been under 20 wins. Like, you understand what I'm saying? 20 wins, averaging 27 a game. Carl Anthony Towns went out, and all Anthony Edwards did was turn up. We're acting like this is normal. And we're saying a European game. It's like, wait, time out. Like, Tatum been doing what he's been doing at Jaylen Brown for 7 or 8 years. So I just want the narrative to be like, let's not – we screwing Anthony Edwards and Tatum over right now for what they –
Well, Anthony Edwards is second on my MVP. If I can show you my ballot, he's second on mine. And I'll be the only one. So last night, Perk and I on the set, it was great. We're going back and forth. And we're going to try to do this on our show Thursday. Perk was like, you got Anthony Edwards second. I said, I got him second. Cat goes out and they go 12-6. Who took the shoulder? Who shouldered the burden on that? So I'm with you. But Evan, I'm going to tell you, this summer is going to determine the narrative. It's going to determine it because the world is going to see. By the way, if our team goes over there and steps on people, that's going to be seen too. Because remember, all these countries in the world, that's what they have looked up to all their lives. When I go to China and I had people come to me in China and they were like, because you know what a polite culture, Asian culture is, and people just don't walk up to you like in the U.S. They walk up to you and say, "Excuse me, can I talk to you about? I see you on the NBA coverage." I'm like, "Of course, man." And they're all polite, but you know their idols are the people we talking about. They got dude pulls out a Celtics jersey, Jason Tatum jersey. Mm-hmm. So that's gonna reveal itself. But if it doesn't go down like that, you know what I want? I want the NBA, Adam Silver's tired of hearing me say this. I don't want to see that All-Star stuff anymore. I don't want to see people standing around having dunk contests in on Sunday. I don't want to see that. That's a waste of my time as a consumer, as a person who loves ball. It's a waste of my time. It's a waste of everybody's time. I don't want to see 200 points. And that's no competition. That's an exhibition. Put a team of U.S. stars out there against international stars. Tell me we wouldn't be on that. Tell me
who's got that energy like they don't want to be at the All-Star game?
You think that would happen, Dre?
I want to see America versus the old school Yugoslavia. So I'm talking about whatever countries fall inside those Yugoslavia.
Like the old country. School. That would be fun. Yeah. Jokic, yeah. Evan, that would be fine, except politically, I don't think anybody would let them do it. Because I was around to watch the end of Yugoslavia with Vladi and those guys, and I was around for the breakup when some of those guys couldn't even speak to each other. It was heartbreaking. Yeah. It was heartbreaking to see. Yeah. Like, they're together, won Olympics, right? And then the next international competition, they really weren't allowed to really speak to each other. It was, but you, believe me, you and, oh, man. And E.T., you were the only one that wanted to see. I would love to see that. But Dre, you don't think?
Now here's where it's holds us back a little bit, right? And it's a little bit of a culture thing too, because you see it in AAU now, where the art of being the glue, like being able to just fit in wherever you play for that particular play. So like MJ playing on the Dream Team, Charles Barkley led the team in scoring. Like MJ knew that, like, for this play, I need to be the glue. I need to set a back screen. And I need to give myself up for somebody else. Like, just understanding the nuances and the gamesmanship, all those things have fallen so far out of the game, because all we do now is shoot a three or shoot a layup.
I worry about that. That's why, listen, even when I know I would ask you in the preseason or something, Dre, there's going to be one more season. I was always hoping it wasn't going to be your last season, because you played the way I and people of previous generations saw, appreciated, and respected basketball.
But it's valuable to my teammates. It's valuable to my teammates, and it's valuable to my coach, but it ain't valuable to my pockets. And so now I got a 17-year-old son that comprehends how to play the right way.
I was going to say, how's he?
He's got it now. He's grown. He's taller than me. 4-star ESPN's ranking him. Like, great. He understands it.
Great.
But the thing that's holding him back is people are going to say he don't have no bag. Like, he don't do all this. I'm like, no, he got it all. It's just he knows how to play winning basketball. And so if you're playing in a setting where guys that don't have to, and this is why I'm a Bronny fan, because Bronny has a high IQ of basketball. He's just above others IQ-wise, but those with analytics, they don't see it the same way. And so, like, Bronny's going to have a place anywhere in the league because he can fit in anywhere because he's like, I'm going to play winning basketball. And that's a trait that isn't as valuable as it once was.
I want to disagree with you, and I can't. I won't, because first of all, you live it. You lived it. You lived it because Dre, I was there at Courtside in Philadelphia in your early years, so I know you could have gone selfishly and just said, I'm going to go into my bag. You could have. You didn't.
And I took his for it. Oh, he ain't good enough.
Let's hope. Here's what I'm hoping. And we're going to talk about this some more, because we're going to talk about this some more. This is an interesting thing, especially both of you and the way you played, and me getting to watch y'all in college, and me getting to watch you guys, me getting to watch Evan a little bit in high school, watching your evolution of how you played and the appreciation for that. Damn, man, that has got to be, if we don't have guys who can understand that this summer on our teams, if we don't, if everybody wants to be a star, they're going to get pushed. And pushed and put, I'm telling you. And I think that's what the powers that be are worried about, is we don't have what you two brought to games, to practice, to film study, to discussion when y'all were on the team bus or in the hotel lobby about getting to the elbow. Dre, I can see you doing it for years. I can see Evan doing it. I know how y'all played. If we lose that, I don't believe our basketball system can thrive in the way people think it will without that. And that will make it more valuable. Sadly, the absence of things make it more valuable. Will it come back to enhance your pockets in the way that that we would like to see? Maybe not. But everybody ain't got them rings you got either.
There's an exception to every rule, and he is he's a part of my tutelage. Drew Holiday is holding us down.
Yeah,
with the pockets.
Okay, I was gonna say who
because
else?
He saved us in 21.
Yeah, he did. Yes, he did.
When he came from the championship, we lost two games. And we ain't look back when he show up. When he showed up.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right. That's right. Okay. So who else is on that short list for you guys, like Drew, who understand how to play, damn the metrics and the, you know, trends, numbers, all of that, analytics. Who else is on that short list for you guys?
I got somebody for you, E.T.
So I need to see it. Who?
My guy in OKC from Santa Clara.
I like that. Jalen Williams.
Jalen Williams. I like the fact that he's not obsessed with the three, and I hope nobody lets him get there.
And he knows how to play basketball.
Okay, I got to tell you, okay. See, I feel good now. If I can show you my other ballot on my most improved players, like I'm not putting Maxi and SGA on most improved when one was first team all-star, the other average 20. That's not most improved. Yeah. My most improved, I got Jalen Williams, one. I got your teammate on Golden State, two.
Kuminga.
I got Kuminga, two. And I got Kobe White, three. Those are the three guys I got.
Yeah.
For my most improved, because really there was a jump to me.
Yep.
And those guys, you know, seemingly. But, oh, man, it's good that he said about Jalen Williams. Because I think he's – people going to look, if Oklahoma City can go two series at least – people are going to see how good Jalen Williams is, and they're going to see they ain't watched him all year.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that whole team, that whole unit is amazing. Before we get out of here, obviously, I want to ask you one final thing, and I want to about you personally. And I want to say, you know, looking back at your career, what do you want your legacy to say, you know, within the sports world of journalism? There's so much things that occur. What do you want your reputation to be?
Evan, it's interesting you asked me that because I'm just – coming to the point where I'm deciding on writing a memoir, where I've decided, yes, I'm going to do it.
Oh, write Dre's memoir.
I'm always pushing that conversation off, and I'm always screaming at young writers to not go crazy with the legacy thing because people are too young. But I'm damn sure old enough to have to think about it and what I want that reputation to be. And I want it to be for good storytelling. I want people to want to have listened to what I have to say, because one, they knew I appreciated good stories no matter where they came from. No matter where they came from. Great stories are, you know, like I was the kid who wanted to be with the old people in the room because, you know, we had an old uncle or an old aunt in there, a grandparent that could just tell great stories. You want? I was staying in there. Y'all go to the kid table. I'm staying in there. I'm going to hear these stories. So I appreciate, I love good storytelling. And I want it to be that. And I want to think that I have been inclusive in terms of the people I recruit to this, the people I look up to, the people that helped me. I want them to say that I was inclusive. I wanted to include everybody. I was welcoming in the process of this. But the storytelling is the first part. That I knew how to tell a good story and stay out of the way of it and not let my ego get in the way of good stories. I still look for them. That's one reason why I still go to locker rooms. I want to listen to guys. I want to hear. Yeah. Like, I appreciate guys telling their stories, you know? Generations now. That's why I want to go talk to Anthony Edwards. Like, I want to see who's behind the high-flying block and dunking to the point where he's hitting his head on the rim. I want to hear who's, like, who is that dude?
Yeah.
And so that is still what matters to me, and I hope good storytelling matters to people as we go. Because everybody's got a story. There's so many great ones. I learned going to the Olympics about stories internationally. I'll tell you one quick one, and this is important to me. Like, There was a young woman in California, and she wrestled, right? She was on the U.S. wrestling team. And she was, I think, Iranian American. And her father would not come and see, being old world, her father would not come and see her wrestle because there was no girls wrestling in the high school in California where she grew up. She had to wrestle against the boys, and her father wouldn't watch. Her father would not watch her wrestle. He couldn't stand it. So she goes on, she wrestles, gets to college, she wrestles against women. She makes the Olympic team. On the eve before she's going to represent the United States, she doesn't know whether her father's going to come watch her. He's never seen her wrestle. Her father's like a doctor. He's a self-made man. He's a successful person. But he couldn't bring himself to see his daughter, what he considered, demean herself like this when she was a teenager growing up and wanted to do this thing that boys did. Mm-hmm. We're all looking at the door just like she is when she's on the mat and she's introduced and she's about to wrestle and represent her country. And her father comes in on the top level and walks down the stairs. Now, you tell me you think there's a dry eye in the house for that. Those kinds of stories matter. They matter. They've always mattered to me.
That's a movie.
That is crazy, isn't it? That is crazy.
And the world is full of those. And I've been lucky enough to cover the people that also, you know, one of my favorite dudes I like to listen to, Dre, a former teammate of yours, was Dikembe.
Dikembe.
Deke would have stories, bro. Deke is a DMV guy, you know, in the district when I'm spending more of my time in DMV. Deke would have stories. He'd call me up and it's just great to lock into the people who understand that people all over the world have voices and have something to say. And can we amplify those? And so when you guys started this conversation, I appreciate you guys for taking it that direction, because that you summed up at the beginning what matters to me. Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And I got one favor. Just make sure you do the voice on the audiobook.
Yeah, please.
So leave yourself some room, because it takes time.
Yeah.
Yes.
See, I'm learning something already.
Yes.
I'm learning something. Listen, before I do it, I'm probably going to call you guys for some insight. And listen, what you guys are doing matters, all right? It matters to me. I know it matters to me. Again, expression. Well, this is something we didn't value as a culture for decades. Mm-hmm. And it was only a few people telling the stories, and sometimes it was the wrong people telling the stories. And there's a voice out there, and so I know I get to know already your individual voices from knowing you guys, but collectively and culturally, we need that input. We need that participation. And so y'all do me proud, man.
Both, yes, sir.
Evan, yes, sir. And Dre, y'all do me proud. I appreciate it. Especially where you guys come from and all of the kinship that comes with that. That means something to me.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
No, thank you for everything, Mr. Wilbon. Obviously, what you do, how you put on Chicago, and then, you know, always just keeping it smooth with it. You know, as a Chicago player like myself. Yeah, man, I appreciate you.
Thank you. It means a whole lot. Hopefully, I'm going to see you guys in person somewhere during the playoffs.
Yes, sir. All right,
you guys.
I appreciate it.
Take good. Care. Thank you,
sir. Thank you, sir.
No, thank you.
Point forward.
The Point Forward podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. All statements regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by the Point Forward podcast or podcast guest, and are not endorsements or recommendations by the Point Forward podcast to buy, sell, or hold any security. This week on Money Moves powered by Art Invest and the Point Forward crew. Week 3, we are talking about savings versus investing, building wealth over time. What are the differences? Quickly, savings account, most folks understanding as that, is a short-term financial security. The purpose of it being for emergency funds, short-term goals. The characteristics are low risk, low returns, high liquidity, meaning you won't make as much money on it. Like CD now is doing decent, you know, around 4-5%. And then you're able to extract the money anytime you need it. Investing is long-term wealth building. Purpose of it is to, you know, things like retirement, major life goals, buying a house, things of that nature. Characteristics are potential for higher returns, which make it more risky, and it's less liquid, meaning you have to put your money in for a longer period of time, whether it's, you know, a couple years or a decade, depending on your financial situation and when you absolutely need money. And when we say need, we've been speaking about this over the last couple of weeks, assets versus liabilities. ET, any real world examples you want to speak of in terms of saving examples and investing examples?
Let me think. To be completely honest with you, like I said prior, my first like 5 or 6 years, I saved as much as possible. You know what I mean? So I was well aware of like where I was financially and where I wanted to get to. So at one point, this is saying so funny, I wanted to make sure I was able to, let's say my first year I was making $8 million a year. Okay. My overhead was maybe like 20 bands, maybe. I was being super like frivolous per month. You understand?
Right.
Not saying like crazy, but my mom, this, like I was living off. So I remember by the time I hit my fourth year in the league, I remember sitting down and me and my finance advisor was like, yo, you hit this point now for the rest of your life, you can be able to a decent level of 6 figures. You understand? Mm-hmm. And I just knew like just starting off, I was always cautious of, you know, in the NBA, they give you the conversation on trying to save early and save frequently. So I was always cautious trying to save early. It wasn't until later where, you know, putting money away and saving, but then at the same time going into, you know, my local community, which was Columbus, and investing in, you know, startup and opportunities. So I was able to invest in 2 hotels over that period of time. I was able to invest in one of the first biggest condominiums put near campus. And I thought that was pretty cool. I was sitting down, like, as opposed to playing with my money during the season, before I left every fall, I would find something to invest in. And hopefully by the time, like, the spring or summer pulls up, that was kind of like my play money. You understand what I'm saying? I thought that, like, all right, I'm going to make my way and make my move to be able to buy what I wanted at that time. When I was younger, it really wasn't anything. But it was me being cautious of saying, hey, let me take a step back and, you know, we'll work through the, you know, fall, winter.
Yeah, for me, it was very similar. My first contract, like, I didn't know. I couldn't identify what the really expensive things were. Like, I didn't know about the things we know about now, obviously. Yeah. So I was just naturally saving because I really didn't know where to spend it. You know, I'm used to White Oaks Mall, Springfield, Illinois, where the buckle was like the spot, you know, where you can get your FUBU or you can get, you know, whatever the hottest clothing was at the time. Vocal, Nelly had his gear. So that's what I knew. So naturally I saved, you know, I had the car I was looking for and I had a house that I bought. And so other than that, like, yeah, it was very, very low maintenance. And so it worked out for me. And then as I was able to build that, I saw how much money I saved. And I was a little frivolous with spending for once I got my big deal, but then I got it right back in check. You know, I know folks have saw me speaking towards Elton Brand and him giving me the proper, you know, knowledge and financial advice to help me know what compound interest was and know how to get that treasure chest. And so I think a lot of listeners or a lot of, you know, regular folks, they don't make the same type of money that we've been able to make as professional athletes. Yeah. So it's just trying to help them understand the importance of recognizing both importance of saving and importance of investing. So I think for us, it was like we knew to save. And once we save and could make interest off our money, then we were able to be more risky with our investing, whether it's investing in a tech company or whether it's investing in a large real estate property. You know,
We're flipping it back and being like, all right, I'm going to take this, double this, flip this back. Let me rewash 3 or 4 times before I really take the bread and go play with it. You know what I mean?
And I think folks can do that. Like, that's what folks should be trying to do. It's just like, and then understanding what you're investing in, understanding market cycles, you know, ebbs and flows, and being able to withstand a loss. I think people can understand that too.
No, it withstand a loss, but, you know, continue to try to, like you say, you know, I think one thing you taught me that was so important when I asked you about, you know, finances and saving and everything like that. And you're saying, yo, make sure you get to the point where you want to get to, but at the same time, enjoy yourself. I remember the text message you sent. You said, I got all the money in the world that I can't remember the last time I had funk. Mm-hmm. And I remember sitting there and it's like when I talked to Charles Barkley, because I was so gung-ho and like saving money, of course. And I was just like, yo, so what do you do with this? What do you do with that? And he's like, yo, just make sure you have fun. Like, enjoy yourself. What's the point of working so hard and you're not going to have fun? You understand what I'm saying? He's like, make sure you save your money, take care of your business. Don't be an idiot. But, like, make sure you have fun with all that. Like, anything else is going to make your head explode. And I was like, I was like, damn, that's crazy. Like, that's some advice you don't, like, really hear, but it's real advice. But when you look left and right, we give all these, you know, everybody would be in the 1% if they did what they were supposed to do. You know what I mean? In city. But I think at the same time, we joke around. And, you know, you heard some flock last week about, like, we're doing our best splurges across the waters, you know, 10 years right. after saving. But then also, too, we're trying to do financial literacy and money moves. But like I always say, the complexity of human beings is the most beautiful thing on earth. Mm-hmm. You don't always have to have a stick up your ass. You know what I mean? True. After you take the stick up your ass, just keep your hand on the fucking button. Shut up.
I think you're preaching balance, though, at the same time. Yeah. It's just like, yes, we went and saved for 10 years, and now we're going to do something with the interest that we reaped from, you know, saving our money and being responsible. And so just kind of break it down and close it out, the importance of recognizing both saving and investing, you know, talking about the importance of saving. You know, it's financial stability during unexpected events. And so it's always something that can happen that you don't not prepare for. And so your savings account, you should put yourself in a position to be able to, like, you know, car wreck or insurance or, you know,
or dealing with window. People investing your money, like learning your business. So if we talk about this stuff with Isaiah Thomas, he said, people saying you're going broke because you took care of your family and bought a big crib. No, you went broke because of the middleman and not understanding numbers. Like, who's doing your taxes? Who's doing all this? Before you know it, your overhead could be $3,000 a month, and somebody just finessed you out $7,500 a month out of your bread.
And then that's a conversation I definitely want to have at some point too. When people ask, you know, how athletes go broke, and then, you know, I spoke to a guy, and he asked the same question. I said, "Well, what did your mom do when you were growing up?" And he was like, "She worked at a bank." I was looking at him like, "Do you not realize what you just said? The woman that birthed you worked at a bank. Of course, you know everything that's going on at the bank with money. Yeah. And you know, when we grow up, we know the things we see on a daily basis." And no one has a bank account where we come from.
Yeah,
how do we identify what a proper financial advisor looks like? And so quite naturally, we're going to run into somebody who said they were, but they weren't. Because we don't know what the real thing looks like.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know, savings account as well as the ability to cover short-term expenses without having to go out and be in debt. So not having to take a loan. Importance of investing, potential for wealth growth over time. We talked about that. It's a little bit more risky. But if you give yourself more time, it's more likely that it's going to return at a higher rate. Outpacing inflation to maintain purchase power is very, very important while you're investing, especially long term. So big, there's some tax incentives there as well. And then just implementing a balanced approach. You know, we talked about, you know, saving and then going out and splurging, but, you know, having a discipline in splurging as well. And, you know, a balanced approach being assess your financial goals and risk tolerance, prioritize building funds for short-term goals in your savings account, allocating funds for short-term goals in savings account. I think I just said that. Invest for long-term goals in a diversified portfolio. Regularly review and adjust your saving and investing strategies. That is very, very, very important. I like that one the most. And then last but not least, consider seeking advice from a financial professional and making sure that they're a real financial professional. Ask them, are they certified? What banks they work at? And then actually there are low risk user-friendly apps to get your feet wet in savings and investing today. Examples are Acorns, Robinhood. I personally, one of my favorites, Coinbase is another one of my favorites. I invested in both. SoFi as well. They just did a big thing with our guy, Jason Tatum, a pretty cool rollout. And then Betterment as well is one of the newer ones. And so in conclusion, you know, I want folks to understand the difference between saving and investing and how they are crucial for achieving both short-term financial stability and long-term wealth. Also, remember the key is to start small, educate yourself, and consistently work towards your financial goals, no matter where you are in your journal. Drop us a question in the comments if you have any questions at all.
Point Forward.
Thanks for tuning in to yet another episode of Point Forward. Don't forget to follow Point Forward on all social media and subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcast. We appreciate you listening. See you next week.